What?
It's the end. But the moment has been prepared for.
What the... It's a splinter, Keith. You have a splinter in your finger.
But it really hurts!
Get the tweezers.
It's a bit of blood if you'd squeeze it.
Go.
Sorry. Welcome, welcome, welcome to this, another exciting episode of the Staggering Stories podcast. I'm Asda Man.
I'm Fake Keith.
I'm Adam.
And I, yes, I am...
A bit of a wuss when it comes to blood.
It was all the way, you pinched the skin and then just a little drop of blood.
Sorry.
So without further ado, here's the news with El Presidente.
Woohoo!
Doctor Who news.
Yep.
BBC pledge support.
Ooh.
Is that sort of polish?
Yeah.
The future may be uncertain, but the BBC has again pledged support for the series, come what may, with Disney. Talking at the Edinburgh Television Festival, Kate Phillips, director of content, said, "Rest assured, Doctor Who is going nowhere.
Yay.
Disney has been a great partnership, and it continues with the war between the land and the sea next year. With or without Disney, Doctor Who will still be on the BBC. The TARDIS is going nowhere."
Nope,
that's going to be a really crap series. Yeah.
It's XR to Earth, yeah.
Not only do we have a pledge that may or may not be limited to the upcoming CBeebies series, but we also now know to expect the unit spin-off next year, rather than the soon that we've been led to believe.
Well, you know, in geological terms, next year is quite soon.
Geological?
Yeah.
Do you mean cosmically speaking?
No.
Temporal?
I'm talking continental shift.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, geological is less than cosmological type,
yeah,
really.
Yeah.
It's just weird. You know, our grandson, when we were having fish and chips on Brighton Beach, right, said to Keith, "You guys have some really weird conversations." And he's not wrong.
I just have a weird laugh.
Yes.
Highlander. Gillan joins the cast. Karen Sheila Gillan is joining the increasingly impressive cast list of the up-and-coming Highlander remake, apparently taking the smallish role of the Highlander's wife, Heather MacLeod. The remake of the 1986 film will star Henry Cavill as Conor MacLeod, Dave Bautista as the Kurgan, Russell Crowe as the Scottish-Egyptian-Spaniard, Ramirez. Gillan herself reposted the news item, simply adding, "Dialect coach can sit this one out."
Excited,
she's
Adam. A Highlander. She's going to be in Highlander.
Yeah.
I'd probably go see it anyway, but I have to see it now. it does seem that they ought to have at least one actual Scot on the cast.
Yeah.
Then we'll see. They had Sean Connery last
week. Sean Connery playing a Scottish, Spanish. Egyptian, Spanish.
Yeah.
The accents were really all over the place.
Particularly for the Highlander.
Yeah. So really she should play with a French accent.
Oh, probably, yeah.
So it's a complete remake of the 86 films.
Given the cast they've said and the characters, it sounds like a complete remake of the original. I'm sure it's not scene for scene, but hopefully she'll have a bigger role than Heather did in the original.
We'll see how that works out, yes.
Yeah.
Doctor Who news.
Oh, yeah.
I'm happy about this one.
Concept art book alert.
Woo!
Fans of concept art can expect to shell out money in November for The Art of Time Travel, featuring the work of Doctor Who concept artist Peter McKinstry. Did I pronounce that right?
I think so.
McKinstry.
You know what I'm like?
Yeah.
The hardback book includes never-before-seen concept art, sketches and designs that offer a unique glimpse into the creative process behind the iconic show, including comments and notes from showrunner Russell T. Davis, as well as original works of art from the latest era of Doctor Who. The book is due for release on the 20th of November.
You'll have to see if Father Christmas brings it for you, won't you? Have you been a good boy?
I've been a very, very, very good boy. I haven't even tapped the mic yet.
Oh, well, this makes up for last time. So that's you sorted for Christmas.
That's me sorted for Christmas, yeah.
I don't have an RRP yet, but it's probably looking £35-40.
Yes.
I'm sure Father Christmas can stretch
full
to
colour.
That.
Full colour.
Yeah.
Yeah, hardback book.
So we'll just get you some felt pens or something to go with that.
Moffat!
Oh.
British government's drama series.
Ooh.
Stephen Moffat, the Vast Toffee,
MN,
has announced his next project, Number 10. This isn't a sequel to Inside Number 9, but instead a drama, no doubt with heavy Moffat's comedy, about Number 10 Downing Street. According to a press release, it sounds like the work of Moffat himself. The government will be fictional, but the problems will be real. We never know which party is in power, because once the whole world hits the fan, it barely matters. This is a show about the building and everyone inside. Not just the Prime Minister upstairs, but the conspiracy theorists who run the cafe three floors below, the man who repairs the lift that never works, the madly ambitious advisers fighting for office space in cupboards, and of course, the cat. It will air on Channel 4 at some point, with a currently unknown cast and number of episodes.
So it's kind of adding to the list of Yes Minister, Yes Prime Minister, House of Cards, in the thick of it.
Probably, yeah, somewhere in between.
Yeah,
it's a drama, but knowing Moffat, there'd be a lot of comedy in there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it's not going to be an outright comedy like Yes Minister or...
I love the idea of the conspiracy theorist on site.
Yeah, yeah, he's clearly got a few characters in mind already.
Terence Stamp.
Dead.
Yeah.
Terence Henry Stamp, award-winning actor, has knelt before death, entering the Phantom Zone at the age of 87.
Yeah, not bad innings.
Best known to many as the Kryptonian General Zod in the Christopher Reeve Superman films, he also appeared in such films as Modesty Blaze, Young Guns, Alien Nation, The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, yep. The Limey, Star Wars The Phantom Menace, Elektra Gets Smart, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, and his final film, Last Night in Soho. He didn't do much TV, but he did play Jor-El in Smallville for 23 episodes and appeared in an episode of his Dark Materials. In Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, right. He played Bernadette.
Right.
And, oh, it was just brilliant from beginning to end.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Priscilla?
I have,
you
several times, yeah. I love Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
It gives you, I don't mean this derogatory or anything, but you wouldn't have thought the Priscilla film would have been in his wheelhouse.
Yeah.
But he plays it marvellously.
It's just absolutely wonderful.
Is it mainly Australian or...?
Yeah.
Mainly Australian, yeah. They're drag queens, aren't they?
Yeah.
And he plays Bernadette, who's the lead drag queen, who's been around since the year dot.
Yeah.
And basically has a platonic but very lovely affair with very famous Aussie actor.
Oh, I can't remember the name now.
Not Kylie. he played Bill in Muriel's Wedding. He's just been in everything.
Oh,
and it was the sweetest romance ever.
Pierce?
Say again?
Guy Pearce?
No. But he was...
No, it's an old actor.
Oh, okay. Then.
But yeah. A damn fine resume.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's really good when you take actors completely out of their comfort zone and they throw themselves at something that they haven't done before, and then you get a completely different...
Well, for one thing, it's an opportunity to do something they haven't done before.
Yeah.
And walking through the outback in a ball gown and high heels.
Yeah. He had the perfect face for it, didn't he? And it sort of stopped any typecasting after all the Superman films as well.
Yeah. Oh, well. Any addendums?
No, I have no addendums.
Nope. And that's the end of the news.
Well.
Right, as we come to the end of mine and Keith's summer holiday.
Splinter.
Yes, dear. We decided, mainly because Adam told us we had to, that it was time to watch... some Doctor Who. Pause for music. We've been doing this podcast for yonks.
And over 18 years.
For some reason, we've never done Legopolis.
We haven't.
Season 18 as well, wasn't it?
Season 18 finale.
Yep.
That's it. Yeah.
So we've watched it.
We have.
Yeah.
And I have questions.
Yep.
Okay.
I know people have questions, but I'm wondering what happened that every single person in that story suddenly had no peripheral vision and hearing difficulties. because you had so many times, I mean, Adric stood in the middle of the road and stared at these police officers and they just didn't see him.
Throwing a bike at them, didn't he?
Everybody just didn't hear the TARDIS dematerialising even when they were standing next to it. And, yeah, the complete lack of being able to spot something out of the corner of their eye all through this was just strange.
Excuse me, can I riposte?
You're going to humiliate the four of us, aren't you?
Can I point out, what was it?
Peterborough on Saturday.
On Saturday, we recorded this on Monday. At Saturday in Peterborough, we wandered round a good 5 minutes looking for a cathedral.
We found the church, and we're looking at the church saying, that's a lovely church, but it's not a cathedral. Where could the cathedral be? So we all whipped
Google
our Maps, phones out to look on Google Maps.
Busily looking Google
Maps. When Heath's gone, do you think that's it? And we've turned round, and behind us is this absolutely massive 11th century cathedral that none of us had spotted as we were walking through.
That is my riposte.
That was behind us. Not in our peripheral vision.
Yeah. I mean, okay, well, so we walked level with it and didn't notice it.
When we come up the road, it would have been on our peripheral vision.
It would have been, yes.
We turned left, so it was behind us.
Well, yeah. Anyway. But this was 1981, when eyesight should have been better.
Yeah. And it's worse than that, because we even, at the very end, just before the final scene, you have Adric, Nyssa, Tegan running towards the doctor.
Yes.
Being chased by security guards about 5 metres behind me, if that.
Who never arrive.
Yeah. They're not there for the generation scene. That's where do they go?
They don't arrive till Castrovalva.
And they're different people.
Yeah. That's the thing. They were on them until they all squatted down next to the doctor. So it's like Red Dead Redemption.
Right.
If you hide in the grass, you can be right next to them, but they can't see you. So that's what it was. So they've gone wandering off.
Right.
And also, gravity seemed to have a problem
I concur with that one.
Because that Pharos project was really high.
It was.
And Tom hit that ground. If you look at how Adric, Nyssa and Tegan suddenly all
certainly went, Tegan and Tegan.
Speed of light, wasn't it?
Yeah. Like, he hit that ground really hard. I mean, I've heard that gravity sucks, but that was ridiculous.
So you all saw this on transmission, presumably.
I definitely did.
This is my first, I remember this, my first proper generation. I was born for Planet of Spiders, but only just.
Yeah.
Mm. I was born 3 days before the first episode.
You were busy
so
there.
6 weeks old or something.
Busy there filling your nappy.
Yeah.
So did you know there were other doctors and that this could happen?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I did at the time.
I did. This was, I'd really started getting into it at the beginning of the 18th season. It was becoming obsessive. And then when I heard that Peter Davison was going to be in it, it was secure. But I remember John Pertwee vaguely. I knew he was the Doctor. I don't remember seeing the regeneration. So this was my first live regeneration that I have memory of.
So I saw it with all the BBC video releases. And I remember about this time, they suddenly started doing all the regeneration stories. So soon after Legopolis, Castrovalva came out, which was probably a sensible thing to do because they're quite sort of well linked with Christopher Bibmead writing them both.
It's a part two, basically.
Yeah. And I think I was really excited. And then I watched it and realised it wasn't pronounced Logopolis.
Logopolis. Yeah. Well, I'm not going to laugh. I thought Hermione was pronounced Hermione until someone actually said it.
I'm not going to be smug, but I think this is my third regeneration.
Yeah, because you definitely remembered the Pertwee one because you were like 10 or 11.
Yeah, yeah.
And you remembered the Troughton one because you were about six.
I think I have vague memories of the Troughton one.
Yeah. It wasn't really a Troughton one, though, was it? No, it was a bit cheated.
He whipped off.
Well, it was a bit like the situation now, wasn't it, in that you didn't know back then whether it was going to continue. At the time, Doctor Who, they'd finished their sort of black and white era and it was umming and ahhing whether they'd bring it back again.
Yeah.
Well, this was the around this time I'd started reading newspapers as well. And this was, I think, the first time I'd come across people worrying, oh, Peter Davison's too young to be the Doctor. It's not what it used to be.
Yeah.
I know this has been going on since the 24th of November 1963, but that was the first time I'd come across it. Articles in the Mirror, which was my parents' newspaper of choice.
Yes. This was the time when Mr. Baker deliberately put the cat amongst the pigeons. And I welcome the, I'd like to thank and welcome the next Doctor, whoever he or she may be.
I do remember this was the first story I'd watched from Series 18. And it was a bit of a shocker, because it was quite heavy going, wasn't it, on the science. And I was quite young, I think, when I saw it. So I didn't follow everything.
Yeah.
But I could...
I do even now.
Yeah. There was definitely a sense of something, you know, about to end. I mean, even down to the soundtrack.
It's funereal. It's very doom-laden.
Yeah.
And very, as you said, funereal.
Paddy Kingsland, yes.
One of my favourites. And I loved the concept of the Watcher, because it just looked like a ghost from the future, didn't it? Staring across the motorway.
I'm wondering how many people drove past. wondering what the hell is going on.
It was filmed on location. And it was filmed next to the last surviving police box in England that had actually been torn down the month before.
Yeah.
So they had to take the TARDIS.
So they had to take the police box prop.
But then it's probably just for the best, because the prop doesn't really match the original police box.
Not anymore. The numbers have slipped slightly.
Yeah.
And of course, this introduced Tegan.
It did.
Who, at the beginning, I suppose it's all down to nerves, but they made her out to be a bit ditzy, you know, forgetting everything, forgetting a bag, a passport to shut the front door. But she was likable.
Yeah.
In this. Because sometimes Tegan was less than likable, although she is, to this day, one of my favourite companions. Yeah.
I do love the scene where she's wandering around lost in the TARDIS corridors and then bursts into the control room, shouts at the Doctor and Adric, and Tom Baker's acting is just sort of...
He physically flinches.
What the hell's going on? And there was so much of the TARDIS this time.
There was the same corridor from different angles, because there was dust on the floor, and no matter where you were, there was this same little patch of dust. She'd be standing next to the dust.
Yeah.
Right, I could go down here, so the camera looks, and there's the dust again. So it was one segment of corridor that they ran up and down from several angles.
Of course. But it introduced certain things that are staple now, like the cloister bell. And also the cloisters.
I remember at the time absolutely adoring the cloisters, and I still do.
Yeah.
I mean, I know they would do it different now, but I thought they were just lovely.
They have done with the movie, The Cloister Room. Yeah.
Because the TARDIS was pretty integral, particularly in the beginning of the story, wasn't it, with it landing inside itself over and over again.
Because that had also been done before with a Pertwee one. I think it was Time Monster.
Yes.
Pertwee's...
The Master's TARDIS again,
inside the Doctor's TARDIS, inside the Master's TARDIS, inside the Doctor's TARDIS. Mm.
Except this time, as you went to each one, they slowly lowered the lighting, didn't they? And it got more spooky each time.
Yeah. I didn't quite get how that worked.
You're not meant to.
No, because Master somehow knew to materialise around this last police box.
Yeah.
Just for the Doctor did.
Yeah.
So therefore, the police box the Doctor materialised around was his TARDIS.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It didn't seem to be, because at one point, the Master then leaves.
Leaving the police box.
That's why you had. That's why everything started getting darker. You didn't have that the first time, though. They stayed inside, so you didn't have that recursive aggression.
And worse than that, at one point, the Doctor and Adric, indeed, go into the police box within the concert room and come out of the real police box.
Yeah.
Yeah, that right at the end. That one, that always
going
got
into
me.
A police box, come out of a police box.
Yeah.
It doesn't hold up any scrutiny, I don't think. But maybe I just don't understand it.
For me, you don't have to understand it. It works narratively.
Yeah.
It obeys the laws of narrative.
It's not the same as in the Moffat comedy one,
no.
Space and Time, where the outside shell appears inside.
That's slightly different.
That's properly linked.
That's slightly different.
Yeah.
The bit that didn't work for me was the Doctor's idea to materialise the TARDIS in the Thames and flush it out.
Good job they didn't do it, though, because Tegan was... Yeah. And also, he's got to eject part of the TARDIS. It's infinite, this machine, but he ejects Romana's room.
Yeah. Has no need for Romana's room anymore.
Some bad feelings there.
All that stuff too, or does that go in storage? I don't know.
No, I imagine that's gone too.
His then wife at that point, didn't he?
Yeah.
Because they both left to get married.
Yeah. Married, yeah, only weeks before, I think.
Yeah, dear.
Legopolis itself, from the beginning, I loved the look of it. It always reminded me of raspberry ripple ice cream.
Yes.
And as Keith said, it's laid out to look like a brain.
Looks like the long shot, the model shot.
Yeah,
it does look like a brain.
I've thought about that,
But when they printed up the mission codes, why on earth didn't they let Tegan read it? Because Adric had only just been taught by the Doctor how to read it. She kind of knows this stuff.
Well, I thought. Although, was the Doctor just lying because he could read it anyway because of the TARDIS? The Doctor just explained it away. I've taught you how to do it. I don't know. Yeah. Bubble memory. Yeah. Clearly that was a big thing at the time.
At the time it was. Yeah.
There was a lot of circuit boards.
Because you because you saw the tape reels in the background. Yeah. You had to reload.
Bubble memory did not last long.
No.
That's a technology.
And I think I saw computer paper at one point. You know, the old green serrated paint.
Oh, yeah.
It was definitely a Dot Matrix printer there, which was very much of its time, which is fine. Yeah. And it's meant to be emulating this Pharos project.
Yeah.
Although why they chose that particular radio telescope.
Because the BBC had access to...
Because they couldn't they couldn't film and get location at Jodrell Bank.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but even... The entire Pharos project was fake, apart from the building, which I think was actually a BBC building.
Yeah.
It wasn't actually a radio telescope building at all.
Exactly. They couldn't get access to Jodrell Bank, so we're going to have the Pharos project.
Yeah.
I love it when they're making their way there before the security guards get involved, and you've got that waka waka music going on the whole time. It's
as they're
so
running
funky.
Through the undergrowth.
Yeah. And you've got Anthony Ainley with his compression eliminator, haven't you? And the Doctor throwing
it
away.
How did they not know?
But I think all of the science in it was like top of the bill at that time, wasn't it? Because have famous scientists like Alan Guth doing the Big Bang and cosmic inflation all that radio astronomy. So it was really indulgent on Bidmead's part, wasn't it? It was just, I want to write this because I like this stuff.
Yeah. And why not?
Yeah.
Block transfer computations. Interesting idea. It's a bit like magic. Instead of words for a spell, it's just mathematics.
Well, they have that in the Shakespeare code, the Crillitanes. Using words instead of numbers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anthony Ainley in this was magnificent.
Yeah.
Way through. When the Doctor realises they have to team up and the Master knows that he's about to ask to team up, and he just dusts off the dust from his sleeve.
Which he actually does for Tom Baker, the scene in the telescope where the Doctor's about to do something, so the Master just brushes dust off his shoulder.
He was so wonderful. Well,
this is besides a laugh from Keeper of Traken and saying, new body at last, this is his first episode.
Yeah. It is, as the Master.
So he's going for it full...
Yeah,
there's also an element of flux in it, isn't there? Where they start destroying the universe, and a whole chunk of it just goes, including Traken
and this other planet. Yeah,
and it's briefly touched upon. You just see this is not very happy, and then
everything's fine. You killed my father. You know, I'd have gone in with fists, but he just moves her to the side and carries her. Yeah. And when Tegan finds out her Aunt Vanessa's died,
pat on the back.
It's just like an awkward pat on the back and move her away.
Yeah.
And you can just hear her cry. Crying in the background.
Oh, forgotten, never mentioned again.
Yeah. This is the 80s. We don't do emotion in the 80s.
Because everyone dies around these companions. You had Adric with no family, an orphan because his only brother had died.
Yeah,
and then
Nyssa
all of that
with planet and no family.
Yeah.
And all we know is that Tegan's got an uncle who lives in an English village, and that went down well as well.
Yeah. Also, I think... considering it's the end of the season, it is some high production value. Some money's been saved to put into this. I mean, the crumbling Logopolis, for instance.
Yeah, some rather dangerous-looking stuff going on there.
Yeah.
Stuff falling just in front of the
actors. Chunks. Yeah.
Lots of dust and smoke.
Usually, by the end of the season, they got no money. Don't do anything.
And instead of trying to hypnotise Nyssa, the Master uses a bracelet this time to try and do it.
Happened to have in his big pocket.
Which apparently was too small for her, but she could have got her arm hand through it. And you could see she was trying to hold it up on her arm. Oh, it hurts. It's too tight. Well, it wasn't. It was flopping around your wrist a bit.
Good fitting job there.
But I suppose Bidmead must have known that the story will continue, and he'd got the gig for the first Fifth Doctor story in the next season, because it literally picks up with the security guards arriving and the Doctor a bit dazed.
Yeah.
They finished searching the rest of the border, and by that point they'd all stood up. There they are!
Yeah. There was a problem with those security guards as well, because you notice there were all four of them were guarding that small little stretch.
Yeah. You know? What are they doing? I don't even know.
Yeah, before they even arrived and started chasing them.
Three of them, then two more turned up.
Actually, we know where they've been, because between now and Castrovalva, the alarm sound changes. So they were all off at HQ changing the alarm sound.
Oh, that's
yeah,
right.
It's a completely different alarm when you go into Castrovalva.
Well, see, they're not breaking in, they're escaping.
Oh, right, so it's the escape alarm.
It's the escape alarm, it's not the breaking in
As
alarm.
As Crichton said, are you sure, sir? It will mean changing the bulb.
I did notice, talking about the TARDIS, that the actual rotor, the central rotor for the console, is a bit...
ropey?
It's shooting up, shooting down.
Also,
it's not smooth.
That's the gravity thing again.
Yeah.
Also, when they're out of time, you can hear the solenoid, because the
yes.
rotor flashes on and then flashes off.
And okay.
And if you listen, you can hear clunk. Clunk.
Right.
Clunk.
Yeah. Wow. Someone's manually doing that, aren't they, off the side with a switch.
But going back to that, I've got to admit, I'm a geeky little freak, and I loved all the TARDIS bits.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, because if you skip forward to, like, Collins' era, that was the worst part, when you knew they were bulking out at half an episode.
They spent the entire episode in the
TARDIS scenes.
The Cloister Bell, the actual Castrovalva, all the different rooms, the Chameleon Circuit.
Yes,
coming
the Chameleon
and rising
Circuit.
Out, up out of the console.
Yeah, that little keyboard, that little BBC keyboard.
Well, the that console didn't have any decent controls on it. They're all switches, knobs, and how can I put it?
Esoteric.
Thank you.
Yes.
Esoteric sort of controls. Sort of strange knobs and bulges. So it's a decent keyboard.
Yeah. It is, yeah.
And then the next console became nothing but keyboards.
Yeah. Decent buttons.
Well, I am afraid that is the next one is my one of my favourite.
Mine
classic,
too.
It's a lot better than this.
Yeah, classic favourite.
As a story, I thought this was wonderful when I was 11, and I think it's wonderful now.
To my mind, it still holds up.
Yeah,
it still holds up very well.
Interesting concept. I'm not quite sure what the Master's game was from the beginning. If he wanted to go to Legopolis, he could have gone. Didn't need to do all that stuff at the Barnet bypass. What was that all about?
Yes, I'd agree with you, but it's an opportunity to screw over the Doctor.
Well,
that reminds me, speaking of the Master's TARDIS, did anyone notice how it turned into a prop from the adventure game at one point?
Gronda Gronda Rango.
And again, peripheral vision, no one noticed it landing, no one noticed it changed.
There was clearly something wrong.
I am sorry, you cannot mock peripheral vision with the cathedral standing just over there.
And then the Doctor, is it episode two or whatever, he's going to flood the TARDIS to the Master.
Yeah.
Sound.
They fail.
Yeah.
He then just goes to Legopolis and forgets about the Master entirely until he turns up. He's still in the TARDIS, he just doesn't think about him at all anymore.
Well... you did have that meeting with the Watcher.
Yes.
So he's acting on future knowledge. He's got to go, ignore the Master. This is what needs to happen.
What are you playing at trying to flood the TARDIS?
Just get going. Why didn't the Watcher tell him about Tegan then? Because then he wouldn't have jumped so quick, so much when she ran in.
P.S. Watch out for the Australian.
Because also, as we've seen, the Doctor hates himself. So he was screwing. The Doctor is screwing
Anything
with the Doctor.
Anything else I should know? No, not a thing.
And the only reason we know that the Master turned up at Legopolis was because of the Doctor going there.
Yeah,
yeah.
So if the Watcher said, don't go to Legopolis, the whole problem with the entire universe being destroyed would go away.
Master would have just gone by himself.
But also, he would have denied his own existence.
Well,
he would have done.
Sort of did. What is the current theory about what the Watcher is? I know Big Finish have tried to cover it occasionally, but it's very unclear. I mean, some people, they're even suggesting that the Valyard is effectively a fully formed Watcher from between 12 and 13.
Ooh.
But, is he the future Doctor from the aborted timeline where the universe was destroyed coming back?
Possibly.
A
I don't know.
Projection like, what's his name from Planet of Spiders?
Koju.
Yeah.
Could have been sort of a form of projection like Koju.
And is the day saved by the Doctor feeding entropy through the charged vacuum emboitment?
Yeah.
Is that how it works?
Which is what was happening originally, I think.
Yes. Yeah. But you needed the Logopolitans to do it. They were just meant to have formed a program that would have done it automatically.
Yeah.
So again, there was no problem to begin with.
If they just got that computer program going with the Ferris project.
Yeah.
Duplicate.
All would have been fine.
Everything would have been okay.
And Nyssa could have gone home.
And the Master didn't know what the heck Legopolis was doing. Well, decided to mess with it.
Yeah, decided to dick around with it without knowing the full facts.
And so you get, that's the point. You get the idea that he knew something was going on down there. He just wanted to find out what it was and how he could turn it to his advantage.
It was his face when he said, this can block the sound, but it can easily be turned off. Click. Oh, fuck.
And that policeman,
what, the first one got
tried? The officer or the detective, not poor old Davis, who I think is going to take the rap for everything.
Well, yeah. He's a little miniature guy next to...
Oh, no, not him. No, he was the one at the beginning who got zapped, but there was Davis, who was with the inspector, who went over to help Adric because he thought he'd had a horrible bicycle accident.
Oh, yeah.
And then got a bike thrown at him.
And got a bike thrown at him and then had to go and get the keys for the TARDIS. And I think Davis...
Might be in for trouble. Yeah. But the detective seemed to just accept that the two shrunken bodies in the car were real. I don't know. He's like a murder suspect.
Adapted Barbies.
I know, yeah, but you had a little bit of license and you're assuming that he's poked them and they've been fleshy.
Yeah, but you still wouldn't assume that this guy had somehow shrunk them.
There was a lot of us. Perhaps he's done. He did interning at UNIT.
Maybe.
Might be what it is. But didn't they go through a lot of specially adapted Barbies? The murder count in this one was really high.
Yeah. At least three.
Logopolitans.
I think this is why I thought it looked like Raspberry Ripple, because Logopolitan sounds like Neapolitan. I just had ice cream on the brain at that age.
I didn't realise they had such weird shaped heads until on the big screen. Up to now, I assumed it was their hair.
It's actually
the back of their head.
I did know that. I think I read it somewhere in one of the reports that they were it's meant to be expanded brain thing.
A head hunch.
And the leader, the monitor, is he meant to be doing an impression of Noel Edmonds? He looks like Noel Edmonds.
He really did, didn't he? But much more pleasant company.
And Tom's character in this story is different from the rest of the series, this particular series as well, because obviously he changes at the beginning of Series 18, is a bit more somber, he's not allowed to lark around. And then it changes again for this one, so it feels even more somber.
Although when the TARDIS was shrinking, and when you retire, you really do have to make one of those. When he looked up at the screen and there's just big faces and the look of horror on his face. So it's a big Adric face. Ooh, horror. Look back at him and then big Nyssa and Tegan face. Ooh, even more horror. I'm impressed, though, that Janet Fielding can run in those heels.
Across grass.
Across grass, across rubble and everything on Logopolis.
Gravel.
Yeah, impressive.
I think, do they really give shoes like that nowadays? Surely not.
Well, this wasn't nowadays.
It wasn't, but even back then, did they really give them high heels?
They were about inch and a half, but I always thought that you couldn't wear high heels on an aeroplane. But then I thought if you overfeed a goldfish, it'd turn into a shark. So,
But this was in the time where there was a height restriction, wasn't there?
With and she's only like 5 foot two. Yeah,
she was under
And it's mentioned somewhere that she lied about that, is it?
she was under the height restriction, but because it's Australian Airlines, the height restriction is lower, apparently.
Right.
What she said.
That's what she said.
I think we can forgive that. But...
Then there's the actual regeneration. They hadn't done one of those for a while, had they?
And, 7 odd years.
Yeah, and also one first time with flashbacks.
Yes. Because he has a couple, doesn't he? He has all the baddies, all the villains hanging off.
JNT did love a flashback.
He did.
Because you didn't have all the old BBC videos at this point, so this was your
This was
little...
the only access you had to past.
And God, some of them were desperate. When you got to the companions, having to be facing the camera saying, Doctor, some of them were really desperate, really cut off quite quickly.
Harry's moving, isn't he? He sort of pauses. And like the baddies, they get more desperate, and you end up with the pirate captain.
Yeah. Random
doctor
doing a really weird thing with his eye.
Yeah.
But this was fun. Yeah. It was. I remember feeling incredibly sad when he fell off the Pharos project. Mm. I was just really, really sad about that. But then he turned into Peter Davison, and I was quite happy again.
Yeah, you would do.
And it feels
sat up.
He did sit up.
It feels very final with the final credits as well, because they do something different with it, don't they? They put like a kaleidoscope effect over it.
It is a weird stagger thing, yeah.
Yeah, it cuts his head off.
So they don't say, and introducing.
No, it's just Doctor Who, Tom Baker, Doctor Who, Peter Davison.
Yeah.
And you notice Tegan got second billing from the Doctor quite quickly. It used to be the Doctor, Adric, but as soon as Tegan was introduced, she was above Adric.
Really? Okay. It did feel weird, Adric being the only companion at the beginning.
Yeah.
They're arguing between the two of them in the TARDIS.
See, I enjoyed that.
Okay.
But then I tend to like it when there's just one companion.
Banter.
Yeah, the banter is rather good.
This is the beginning of the crowded TARDIS.
Yeah.
Oh, at the end of this one, we've got three companions.
Yeah.
Which is frankly unnecessary.
Yeah. Well, there was lots of, in the writer's guides, I imagine, lots of including, please put one of them in a tunnel for the episode.
Lock two of them under a floor panel for a whole story.
Air vent.
Yeah.
But at least Adric could do something in the beginning. You know, he was all mathematician and he was on top of the police box measuring it up.
I was wondering how they did that because...
Me too, because apparently that rickety...
It fell apart at one point.
Yeah. at the back of it, you have people holding it up.
Yeah, there's a previous one with the really shallow roof. Yeah. I think that's the one which actually collapsed on Tom, I think.
Yeah, that's it. When they step in doing the recursive occlusion bit from into the tile, one of them, Tom steps in and you hear it going...
So worth another watch?
Oh, definitely.
Definitely. Yeah. Yes, yeah, it's good fun. It's a very odd way to get rid of a Doctor. Nowadays, okay, they had all the stuff with the Watcher, which is new.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was a bit of foreboding, a bit of a lead up, but now they do even more. The Doctor would have to sacrifice himself a bit more proactively than here. He's just trying to do something and fell.
Yeah, he was saving the universe.
He was, but...
I still don't understand why he took the big spanner and not used the sonic screwdriver.
That got knocked out of his pocket. Entropy got to it.
Okay.
Why didn't he wrap his scarf around the girder?
Because it's a lifeline.
Although it was thick enough for the Master to trip over it.
It was, yes.
When it was clearly just flopping there.
And then it starts turning and he takes time to put the scarf back on.
He does. Yeah. He needs it for the next scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, we, as expected, we love this one.
It was, despite our complaints.
It was just fun. Like most of Tom's stuff, it was just fun. And we'd like to know what you think about it. So write to us via show
at
staggeringstories.net.
Woohoo!
Someone sitting not too far from you thought that was the best episode because he thought that curly-haired chap should have gone long before then and he should have come back. But as he has no body, he couldn't. 1, 2, 3.
Hello, Head of Pertwee!
Hello, Inky McSquirts-a-Lot and Dinky McSquirts-a-Lot.
Terence.
Dave Ziller, the Mighty.
Dangerous Churchill, Nazi Spock.
A Moomin.
Various Velmas and Nebulas.
And goats.
And goats. And Amy Ponds.
And the new Woody Dalek.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Still captured in its casing here, its box.
Frozen like amber.
That was very good.
Thank you.
Which is a not at all neat segue. Into what we watched next. We went to the cinema. It hasn't been Pearl and Dean since 1847.
There's still a few cinemas that have it.
Don't encourage him. We went to Cineworld.
Yes.
We purchased chocolates and drinks.
Yes.
We ambled in.
We did.
They dragged us out and made us buy tickets. And then we ambled in again. And we watched The Fantastic Four. Pause for music. Come on, Scott, what did you think of this?
I haven't seen it.
Scott!
The plan was to take the kids there today and everything changed.
Oh, Scott didn't do the homework.
No, so it's just the Fantastic Three reviewing.
Yeah. Okay, Adam, lead off.
Okay, it's Pedro Pascal and Vanessa Kirby... Eben Moss Crack, Joseph Quinn, who we know mostly from Stranger Things, as the Fantastic Four. Apparently a 37th MCU film. 37th.
Wow.
And it's a bit of a return to form, I think, for them.
Yes, definitely.
It's a good, fun film. It's been the Fantastic Four. It's not going to be too heavy. It's meant to be quite a light, obviously family-oriented sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I think they did a really good job. They had the danger, they had the fun... and it was all in its own little parallel universe. Yeah, it's for now.
836, I think.
836,
that was it. 836. So is it standalone? It doesn't link into the other 36?
It's sort of standalone, but...
Until the little bit after the credits.
But Thunderbolts,
yeah.
You see the rocket that they were used in Fantastic Four coming through the atmosphere. So some point in time, they're going to arrive in 6168 universe.
Because I know I've been caught out where I haven't seen a film or I haven't caught up on a TV series that links in with something.
Yeah, so at the moment, it's standalone, its own universe, because it's sort of a 1940s universe, a 1950s universe, yeah. Earth. Mm-hmm. But with flying cars and...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's very nice aesthetic. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Sue Storm is pregnant.
She finds out.
She does. And she has a lovely little baby. And, of course, they're all... I was all for it being like Jack-Jack in The Invincible, The Incredibles.
Yeah.
But he wasn't. We went and watched this with our grandson. And the baby, towards the end, gets kidnapped. And grandson's 11. And he's like, Nana, the baby's going to be all right, isn't he? And I'm like, yeah. Baby's going to be fine, don't worry, they would not harm a baby. But I completely forgot to warn him about what happens to Sue.
Yes.
And there's nothing quite like sitting in a cinema hugging an 11-year-old, very sensitive lad, who's trying his hardest not to sob.
It all runs out fine, but there was a moment.
It does, but there was a bit. It was like when I took Construct Number 2 when he was a lad to see... a Pokemon film and Pikachu and Ash is dead and Pikachu's trying to bring him back to life.
We had the same thing with my little brother and Optimus Prime dying in the Transformers film.
Yeah. All right, he doesn't get better in that film.
No.
At least Sue gets better.
And I do remember when that first Land Before Time film came out, I was in charge of a group of children and I could feel the tears welling as one of the mothers died and I had to keep a straight face while we all watched it.
Yeah. Is this the coming of the great big meteor?
No, this is not the coming of the great big meteor.
Talking of great big meteors, we also had a comic book correct Galactus.
Mm. So like anatomically correct?
No, comic book. Because Galactus was the villain of the second Fantastic film, but in that one it was just a great big amorphous cloud. Mm. Yeah. Where in this one he's actually...
a big, evil, horned beast.
Yeah.
Yes.
So he might change size a couple of times in ratio, relation to everything, but yes.
Well, he had a big ship in this one.
Yes.
He was pretty big. Yes. He wasn't big enough to eat a planet himself, but his machine was.
Yes.
Yeah. This one brought in the Silver Surfer.
Yes.
Who comes to warn everyone that
the
Earth...
The Herald.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
heralding Earth's demise. Yeah. Now, I love the Silver Surfer because I had Marvel Top Trumps when I was a kid and the Silver Surfer was ridiculously the best one in it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, the stats were just amazing, but it was a bloke. This Silver Surfer's not a bloke.
I think that's the Unlimited series of comics. They gender swapped her in the Unlimited series.
Idea, yeah.
I think.
In the previous film, male.
So they haven't gender swapped her just for this film. There is history there.
The Fantastic Four, of course, are called on to go and see what they can do about this.
Sort him out.
So you've got
Ben Grimm,
the thing. You've got
Johnny Storm,
who's Flame Boy,
the Human Torch,
and what's his face? What's his first name?
Reed Richards.
Reed
Richards, Mr. Fantastic.
And 9-month pregnant Sue Storm.
Yep.
All zoom off in their rockets with everyone cheering them and waving their little flags to see what they can do.
I did love the rocket connecting, like Jedi, the rocket connecting to the faster-than-light unit that's still in orbit.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Incredible tech, haven't they?
Yeah.
Faster-than-light drive.
And, of course, things don't go to plan.
Nope.
Because Big Bad wants...
Galactus.
Wants baby.
He's given the choice. Either I eat your planet or you give me baby.
Because, of course, being 9 months pregnant, going into light speed and that and all that's quite stressful. And she had the baby. The birth scene was quite funny.
Yeah.
Why does he want the baby?
Galactus is eternally hungry. That's why he's eating planets. He has this humongous hunger. And apparently, in some way, the baby can alleviate or take on responsibility for that hunger so he wouldn't be hungry again.
Because, of course, the baby is the product of two super beings.
Right. Okay.
So,
he has cosmic power.
The baby's just a baby, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, he's just going, agoo. Agoo.
So they come back to Earth. And everyone's like, yay, you're back to Earth, woo, you've got a baby, yoo-hoo-hoo. How did it go? We're safe, aren't we?
No.
And some people, what dicks? This reminded me of our argument about The Last of Us, the first series of The Last of Us, how I in no way in hell could have given up the kids to be killed to save the world, but you could because you're horrible. And everyone, they were saying they wanted our baby. Of course, we said no. And everyone's like, well, why? Give them the baby. Like, you horrible, horrible people. I'm sorry, but things bother me.
It's back to the main dish again of the Cayuga, isn't it?
I don't know what you said then. It sounded like a sentence.
I'll tell you later.
Yes, dear.
Okay. Also, we had Mark Gatiss in here.
We did. Yes. As a Jerry Springer type person.
Or some kind of anchor.
Yeah.
Yeah. A show host. Yes. A chat show host.
Yes, that's what he meant. Show host.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of things recently. Yeah. So in Mission Impossible.
American chat.
Latest Mission Impossible, yeah.
American chums. Tell us if Mark Gatiss's American accent was any good, please.
Sounded bad to me.
It sounded a bit odd to me, but
then we're used to him sounding British.
So tell us if it was good.
And we last heard him listening to Nebulous on the way to Peterborough.
We did, yeah. He's really good with Nebulous. Yes.
So they start trying to figure out how to save the Earth from Galactus. And right at the beginning, we had a montage of things, including them defeating Mole Man.
Oh, yes,
we had Mole Man at the beginning.
But more specifically, you saw Reed Richards experimenting with a teleport system and an egg.
Yes.
He did.
But so Reed Richards stumbles upon the idea of moving the Earth.
It's like Journey's End all over again.
It is, yes. Yeah. And they build and construct these humongous, I like saying that word.
You do.
Humongous teleportation units that are facing towards the Earth. So when they're all active, the Earth will go blip.
This is feasible, yeah.
And go blip somewhere else.
And Thingy Face apparently wouldn't notice for a million years. I think that if it went blip and then blip somewhere else, he'd just go, oh, it's over there now, and carry on.
Well, I think the idea is sort of that they're moving it from the Alpha Quadrant to somewhere like the Beta Quadrant.
They did say it was another system with a Goldilocks zone.
Yes.
How they know about such a system is that far away.
They can travel faster at light speed, and that's what you're worrying about.
Well, yes, but if it's going to take Galactus a million years, it's going to take them quite a while by light speed, ship, I would have thought. And they wouldn't even be able to see it for millions of years because of the light coming from it. But
that's quite true, yes.
They wouldn't be able to see it at all because they're reduced to particle atoms and energy and beamed across.
What was it you said? It makes...
Dramatic sense or...
Narrative
sense.
Yeah, okay.
Because they're not travelling there by spaceship. My question is
how do they know about it? Well, if it's that far away, telescopes would see it as it was potentially billions of years ago.
Not
how it is now.
Yeah. Well, they, as I said, we have first the faster than the light travel. At some point in time, they've gone and had a look.
And these big stargates that they left behind would sort of give the game away.
I don't know. It's not questioning it too much.
Anyway, but that actually doesn't happen because just as they're turning them all on, Silver Surfer comes through and detonates all the various teleport systems. They go boom.
Very naughty.
Boom. But luckily, there's one left.
Yes.
In, I think, Times Square.
Somewhere near there.
Yeah.
So this is where baby bait comes into it.
Dun, dun. This is the part where Ben got quite worried. Got a little bit worried, yes. Mm-hmm.
So they use the baby as bait. Spoiler music, la, 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 la. Big, spiky, horny guy comes Galactus. And... That's the one. Comes to find the baby. He wasn't that big when he arrived, was he? He was sort of Godzilla size.
Well, I think...
Maybe two or three times Godzilla.
When he jumped out and in the water, he was a hell of a lot bigger than when he was walking through the streets.
Oh, yeah. That's what I mean. He got smaller. Why not just tread on all the buildings? They have this big plan that seems to go horribly, horribly wrong.
They do a bait and switch and swap the baby out for an empty carriage. Just as Galactus is about to walk in the zone, he twigs.
He goes, that's empty. My God. And he looks around, uses his zappy vision, and finds the baby.
Yeah, in the Baxter building.
And at this point, Sue is awesome. I must admit, I did have a wobble of the chin at this point, but I couldn't blub because I had to be responsible.
Yes, yeah. You were being strong for Ben.
I was.
I can't say I ever thought she was in real danger.
Nor did I. But listening to or watching or reading a story, you get invested
right,
in it.
Okay.
We've discussed this before. Remember how you felt at the end of The Angels Take Manhattan? You remember that feeling where you had to go shopping?
No. That was the woman who waited.
Oh, the girl who waited. Do you remember how you had that horrible feeling and you went shopping?
Yeah.
That's what other people. People have.
Okay. It's called empathy and emotion. Say it with me.
Empathy and emotion.
Emotion.
I'll write it down for you again, okay?
It's what sort of morons called woke.
So, of course, the world is saved. The baby's absolutely fine.
But, unfortunately, Sue...
is pregnant again.
Dead. No, is dead.
Yeah, I forgot.
Brown bread.
Yes.
Totally dead.
Yes.
And that's the end of the story.
Yes.
Yep.
Or is it?
Dun, dun, dun. They lay the baby lay Franklin.
Franklin, that was his name. On her chest. Because they thought she was dead. They'd done CPR. They've done everything.
For all of about 30 seconds.
Yeah, I was going to say, they really didn't put much effort into it, did they? So then they're all very sad. They put the baby on her chest because, that's what you should do, because the baby needs to see death early.
Yeah.
And we discover the baby's power.
Yeah.
Of course.
Magic tears or something. She's not very clear.
Although the best scene in the entire thing comes right close to the end. It's when the three blokes are trying to fit a car seat, a baby seat in the car.
In the flying car.
Yeah. They abandon Mark Gatiss to go off on a vitally important mission.
Because their watches go off.
They do.
Alert.
But they can't fit the car seat. Why did they take the car seat out of the car in the first place? Why not carry the baby or take an extra thing?
I think it was sort of a detachable thing to the
baby. Carry the damn baby.
I know.
So we're assuming that Sue did it originally.
Probably with the baby in one arm, did that with the other arm.
And please. I know it's probably a large amount of CGI and AI there, but I think the baby was probably the best damn acting baby I've seen.
Oh, yeah, there were some very good reactions.
Very good reaction shots with the baby.
I think it's a mixture of real baby and CG baby.
Yeah,
sure.
But when there's a couple of bits when Mr. Fantastic is explaining a few things and the baby's there nodding, taking notice.
I'd say, talking of CG, it looked really good.
Yeah.
We've had some really dodgy CG in some recent-ish Marvel films.
Yeah.
They've rushed it.
I think they're actually beginning to, I hope they're actually beginning to listen to the CG artists.
Yeah.
And if the artist will say it needs 2 weeks to render, they're giving them 2 weeks to render rather than doing Star Trek. Well, you've got one.
Yeah. And then changing the entire ending.
Yeah.
3 weeks before it needs to go out.
Yeah. Because that's been a very large problem with a lot of the recent Marvels is the CG has looked extremely ropey.
Three cheers for people with crap eyesight who thinks it all looks brilliant. Hooray! So, yeah, this was just wonderful.
Yeah.
We saw it twice.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Admittedly, the first one, we'd been walking in 32-degree heat. Then we'd sat through Freakier Friday, which was also really, really good. And I must admit, I fell asleep in the middle of the Fantastic Four. I missed the entire birth scene. And I'm sitting there having woken up thinking, why on earth did they put that machine thing all the way in the middle of the city when they could have just put it by the sea? That would have been so much easier. But now I know.
Yeah.
But this was just wonderful. I would happily go and watch it again.
Yeah.
And good casting. I thought they were really good as their characters.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Pedro Pascal's always lovely.
He's got another film out at the same time as well.
Yeah.
He's in demand at the moment.
Well, you work while your star's risen.
Exactly, yeah.
So we would love to know what you lot thought of Fantastic Four First Steps.
Mm-hmm.
Write to us, please, via show.
At
staggeringstories.net.
Right, the more astute of you will have noticed that neither Jean nor Crumbly are with us. Jean is in Wookie Hole.
She's doing what, a Wookie?
She's racing ducks. Yellow bath ducks. I'm not sure why she's racing them, but she is. And Crumbly, as it's a bank holiday, is with Jane. Now, Crumbly has also been painting a fence, and we assume that he may have got high off the fumes, because the remit was to watch Legopolis and Fantastic Four, and his Crumbly's Corner is Legopolis and the X-Files. So, thanks for that, and over to
Crumbly's Corner!
Hello, Crumbly here. Sorry I'm not at tonight's podcast, but I'm probably at this moment scrubbing paint off my hands after painting the garden shed while I'm at home in Hampshire. However, I would like once again to share with you my thoughts and opinions on what has been discussed here tonight. Legopolis is Tom Baker's swan song as the Doctor, but it is very much an episode of All Change. There are a host of new faces joining. There is the regenerated Doctor in the shape of Peter Davison, with his round, open, bland face. Two new assistants, in the form of a brave air hostess Tegan, and the newly arrived from Trogon, Nyssa. The Master too has regenerated into the form of Anthony Ainley, at his maniacal, cackling best. Definitely a case of All Change on the roundabout. However, even the Master puts his size 10 in it at times, as seen when he inadvertently makes a monumental faux pas in his endeavours to take over Legopolis, and has to call upon the Doctor for help in order to sort out the monumental cock-up that he has created. I may be wrong, but I think this is the first time I have ever seen the Doctor call upon an outside agency to assist him through a regeneration, namely in the form of the Watcher. It was instrumental in saving the day for all concerned, especially when it piloted the TARDIS to take Adric and Nyssa outside of time and space to keep them safe. It was right to bring Nyssa back, although I'm not too sure about Adric. Anyway, a fitting end for Bonkers Tom and a worthy passing of the torch to the new Doctor. Moving on, I would like to give my penny's worth on a series that myself and Fake Crumbly have recently rediscovered. The X-Files hit our TV screens in the early 90s and immediately became a TV phenomenon. The plot and premise don't really need much explaining. Everybody knows about Special Agent Fox Mulder and his investigations into the paranormal and UFO sightings, and how the doubting Thomas, in the form of Special Agent Dana Scully, is assigned to work with him and always turns up not in the nick of time and has missed the monster of the week. The X-Files has a rich source of material to call upon for inspiration, namely Kolchak the Night Stalker, Carnacki the Ghost Hunter, The Outer Limits, The Twilight Zone, The Invaders, but to name a few. There was a short-lived stablemate in the form of the TV series Beyond Reality. In this case, it was a group of college scientists doing research into the paranormal. It featured, amongst others, Shari Belafonte, who also appeared in Babylon 5 Third Space, and Nicole DeBoer, who was well known for playing Esri Dex in Star Trek Deep Space Nine. It lasted 10 seasons, and David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson kept us all enthralled with their on-screen chemistry and the will-they-won't-they sense of anticipation.
They will.
Even though off-screen they couldn't really stand each other. I think The X-Files outstayed its welcome just a little bit towards the end, but it has now firmly found its place in the annals of TV science fiction. Anyway, these are my thoughts as put down on paper and recorded for this episode. I'll be back in the studio for the next podcast, so until then, this is me, Crumbly, saying, be seeing you.
Right. Thanks, Crumbly.
Right, so obviously next week we've got to do X-Files while Crumbly can do Fantastic Four.
Yeah, X-Files. Those first few seasons in particular were great.
Yeah.
They were amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Until it became very clear that they were just making up, so we're going along with the conspiracy stuff.
I think they lost control of the plot.
I think the worst point, the lowest point, was that second X-Files movie where Billy Connolly plays, I think, a child molester. It really didn't.
Billy Connolly played a child molester.
We went to the cinema to watch that with the biggest X-Files fan ever. There was no sci-fi in it, was there? And this fan, he disowned the entire series after that, and we had to go out for cocktails. Emergency cocktails.
Yeah. Emergency cocktails. Yeah.
Drowned his sorrows.
It's quite the phenomenon back in the early 90s or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
It was.
I remember having a big crush on Dana Scully.
My boss did, actually. It was my first job.
Well, they had the Scully effect they talk about. Yeah. Teenage girls at that time started taking up STEM, like science, technology, engineering and maths, because of Scully.
And they based the companion for the Eighth Doctor film, didn't they, on sort of that Mulder-Scully relationship with the red hair. Yeah. Dana Ashbrook, that was the word.
Yeah, definitely.
Dana Ashbrook, yeah. Okay, lead us out, Crumb. Oh.
No, no, aww. Dead. We just got to go.
Should we just go then?
Yeah.
Right. Bye.
All right, see you next time. All right. And so that brings us to the end of another podcast.
Aww. Thank God.
Next time, there'll be more of the same, more fun, frivolity and jollity, more news and reviews, more who old and new. So until that...
X.
Really?
Really?
Xylophone.
Yeah, L for Legopolis, but X.
Comes towards us. This is me, Fake Keith, saying farewell.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Wisdom comes from experience. Experience is often the result of a lack of wisdom.
You learned. You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, series 1, number 479, featuring Adam Purcell, Fake Keith, Asdaman, and the real Keith Dunn. The views expressed here are those of the speakers and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers on the site. No copyright infringement is intended. This has been El Presidente and Fake Keith production for www.staggeringstories.net.